This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 17th of November, 1964. The title of this lecture is Styles of Auditing. This tape is 86 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
What's the date? November the 17th, AD 14. St. Hill Special Briefing Course. Well, we have here a lecture on the styles of auditing. And this is something new that will make actually the training and doing of auditing enormously easier. And although it would appear at first glance to be an unnecessary separation and something that is more precise than is needful, you will find that any old-time auditor at one time or another has passed through one of these phases, because what this is, one of those things that has been going on for many, many years. Auditing styles have changed and shifted around. And it must be very confusing for somebody to say, well, what is an auditing style? So they think it's some individualistic activity. And they try to find out if they hold their little finger in the air, you see, as they present the E-meter cans to the PC or something like this, don't you see? And they think it must be some individualized action. Well, over the years, there have been many auditing styles, and the reason there have been auditing styles is because processes have changed. There have been different processes, and they require different styles. Therefore, at one period of two or three years, you'll see one auditing style was very much in vogue, you know. And at another period, you'll see another one. For instance, 1955, 56, you saw repetitive command type auditing. It was when the TRs first came out. And everybody was going by the TRs at a crash, you see, and so on. And then the ACC up in London, I found out that these TRs were being broken down by auditor interruptions and evaluations and that sort of thing. And there were about a dozen students on that course, the biggest one taught up in London, that were just not getting any result from the PC at all. I made a study of the situation. I found out the auditor was getting in the road to the result. So we invented something called muzzled auditing, and we muzzled them. And in actual fact, I've forgotten which way it was. I think the auditor who had the right to not be muzzled and talk to the PC had a red ribbon around his neck so the instructor wouldn't bawl him out. But the others had to audit muzzled. And we found out that that style brought about progress. And the PCs with progress. In other words, the repetitive command and so forth all by itself, not taking any care of origin, and so on, would, in actual fact, bring a PC on up the line. And this was quite remarkable, don't you see? So in no particular case, the auditor was presenting the case in that. So we got an auditing style called muzzled auditing. More recently, I did quite a bit of work on the auditing comm cycle and looked it over, and found out that what auditors weren't doing at the lower level processes was listening. And we got what has been loosely called amongst auditors, ITSA. Auditing of ITSA. It's perfectly all right for calling it that, but just recognize a slight misnomer. That is just listen style. Then we have another style that came up in sec checking and prep checking, whereby you steered the PC around. Then you did something about what the PC landed in. We worked with this. Had a great deal of trouble, by the way, because it hadn't been dignified as a style. So I hadn't actively planned to simply take these various styles and assign them, but it couldn't have been done in any event until we had all of the processes and gains and we knew where these things were going. Well, we're at that point now, so I formulated these auditing styles. You find out that you're repeating to some degree the various types of auditing which were in vogue at one time or another, and they're now fitted to the various levels. Only they're fitted to the expected progress of an auditor's skill. It's what can an auditor do at a certain level, and what new thing does he now have to learn how to do to go up to the next level. And then you will find that this is fairly easy to do. Now, for instance, one of your confusions about auditing style is that I am sure somewhere or another some instructor has insisted that when you did listen style that you really did guiding style. What you aren't listening, you aren't doing IPSA. Your IPSA is bad because the PC isn't talking interestedly. I see I'm hitting a blank spot with all of you. Yes, you got caught in that one. You'd say, well, now, can this auditor pass IPSA? And this is probably true for every organization in the world as well as here. See? Can you pass IPSA? All right, well, check this person out on IPSA. Well, he flunked IPSA. Well, how did he flunk IPSA? Well, he flunked IPSA because the PC was not talking interestedly. So right away, this put the poor student, and that's probably one of the biggest bugs that auditors have right at this moment, but this terrible thing. If you're supposed to sit there and listen, well, then how in the name of common sense can you do anything, you see, about the PC being interested or disinterested? But yet you couldn't pass IPSA, you see, unless the PC was getting gains in tone arm action. So what was this thing, you see? Whereas putting on the auditor the complete clamps of, you see, he must listen, we then demand tone arm action, we then demand an interested PC, we then demand case advance, we demand now no ARC breaks, we demand the auditing comm cycle be perfect, you see, even get repetitive auditing in there. Well, what happened actually is you're of course being instructed, well, not you particularly, but students out through organizations were being instructed very carefully and with great sincerity by auditors who, of course, were quite experienced. And what looked like auditing to them, you see, was far above the immediate ability of the student to execute. So that, you see, they would start to pass somebody on IPSA, as they call it, which is just whether or not the auditor was listening to the PC. But in actual fact, what they would collide with as an instructor is the fact that it didn't look like good auditing. So they start out on one thing, you see, start on this low-level auditing, which they all understood to be a very low-level action, don't you see, and promptly check the fellow out for class four. And then, of course, wouldn't let the person pass at the low level until the person had moved into a class four, class three, but the person couldn't get to a class four style of auditing or address, of course, because the person could never get out of IPSA. You see the conundrum which was posed here. How is anybody going to find out how to do all these other things if he hasn't first learned to listen? And nobody was letting him learn to listen. Everybody was insisting that he immediately get in this jet, you see, not even the training version, but the fighting version jet, you see. And they were just sending him off down the runway, and they were saying, now all you're supposed to learn is to hold the wings in balance. That's all you're supposed to learn. And they fire him off down the runway, you see, and he'd go through the sound barrier. And then he'd hear over his intercom, I think your acrobatics are very poor. And he's they don't show any polish. Now, let's repeat that Immelman. You see? And then they get back, and then they turn in the report on the student, and they say, well, he didn't pass. Well, why didn't he pass? Well, he couldn't keep his wings level. See, nobody could get through that sound barrier on the auditing progress. So I've seen this and been working with it for some time, and finally formulated this to a gradient scale of auditing approaches that nobody could really skip very badly, because of course at once an instructor having guiding style auditing up the line, you see, at two, knowing it's there, would not then try to pass the student on guiding style auditing when he was in actual fact trying to do something at level zero, you see. So this was not something now that would get involved. So it was a point that was very necessary to straighten out. And it has that instructional value of a gradient scale. After you've learned how to do one thing, you certainly can do the next thing, you see. And after you've learned how to do that, then you can do the next thing. Well, one of the things that's difficult, let's go all the way to the top now, from the bottom in teaching anybody R6 is something that's rather hidden there. And that is the person has to be able to do many different auditing styles, flickety, 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 bingety, bingety, bing, one right after the other, shifts from one to the other, and back and forth again. It's the wildest thing you ever saw in your life. Because the session is going so rapidly that there is no time to handle these things with bass, way back to the beginning type auditing. Well, I'll give you an idea. We're running this PC down the bank, you see. And the PC is in a GPM, and we've got an item all ready to go, and we end the session, and the next session the PC pops up with PTP. Well, now, if we don't handle that PTP, that PC is going to make no progress in that session at all. So now what are we going to do? In the first place, the case is getting much better and is really flying. And what are we going to do? Now are we going to handle this PTP with an hour and a half of what part of that problem could you be responsible for on a repetitive command? Okay, well, we're not going to do that. Well, how do we explain to the auditor that we're not going to do that? He knows how to handle a PTP. He's been very carefully taught. He's been very carefully taught that when the PC has a PTP, you locate and isolate what the PTP is, and then you say what part of that problem will be responsible for, or something like that, for half an hour, or something like this, and the problem tends to evaporate. Well, the only trouble with this at R6 is the problem is undoubtedly closely associated with the item the PC is right now in. It is the tiniest lock imaginable. It has the same order of magnitude of a gnat standing alongside of the Alps. And how are we going to handle this? We have to admit that the PC has a PTP. So we bring this up. The PC has a PTP. We isolate what the PTP is. We guide, you see. And then we simply use ITSA or something like this, you see. And the PC says, well, it's a so-and-so, and so-and-so, and I so-and-so, and so-and-so. And you say, well, that's very good. You have a PTP glance at the meter, you see. That's fine. You haven't got one. All right. Now let's get on with this next item, see? Bang, bang, you know. Well, you see, that violates, if somebody has never been trained to handle a PTP that way, that violates it, and it makes him think that he now audits sloppily. That's the immediate result. He now gets the idea that the higher you go, the sloppier you audit. No, no, that's not true. The higher you go, the more precise you audit, but the sloppier it may look. See, it may look awfully sloppy to an observer, but it's actually far more precise. Rat-a-tat-tat. You're choosing up the process and the auditing style to fit the process right there. Bing, don't you see? Well, what do you think in R6 you suddenly start in and you find out that some item won't read? Well, what are you going to do at that particular point? Well, we're not going to now do a tremendous case analysis or something like this. We're going to take this thing as we can, don't you see? And what does it indicate? It indicates a prep check. Well, very good. The auditor's been taught how to do a prep check. He knows how to do a prep check. You assess the problem or item necessary to prep check, and then you have 18 buttons, and you run each one of these flat. Wow, if you did that to somebody while he was running down through a GPM, he'd have to kill you. Because some of those prep check buttons are very hot locks right on top of items, right on top of end words, and they would ball that bank up like mad if you're running down the bank. It wouldn't necessarily be true if you weren't running down the bank. You see, it's lower level, but it's now very true. So we condense a prep check into this sort of a thing. Ah, well, we know what's been suppressed, the item. See? So we say, well, on that item, has anything been suppressed? And the PC, oh, yeah, so-and-so-and-so-and-so-and suppressed. All right, repeat the item again. All right, that reads fine. We've gone down. That's a prep check. You follow? Well, that's actually a bridged style auditing. It's just abridged. You just cut out all of the non-essentials out of the actual action that you're doing. Of course, that has to be terribly precise because the auditor has to know what's essential about the action he's doing. You see, it's actually more precise than complete full dress parade type of auditing. So at R6, we have all style. And all a fellow has to do at R6 is simply be able to do all the styles which are below level 6. and he does them all consecutively and in various orders. He's liable to be shifting from one style to another style, and you very often find yourself, oddly enough, doing level zero auditing with R6. The species gone off on a wild tear of ISA. Oh, you know, this sort of thing. Gee, you know, that was why I hated my grandmother and so forth. You know, I got some kind of an idea. I had a grandmother at one time or another. Yes, I'm sure I had grandmother and so forth and so on. And I bet all that seems to have had trouble with grandmothers, you know. I mean, grandmothers, grandmothers, grandmothers. She's running some GPA has to do with kill the old or something. Tone arms going at some mad rate, you see. And he, it's a. Well, let me assure you, you as the auditor, as long as that tone arm is moving, it'd just be a fool to open your face. You've been going down the bank, you see. Brr, bow. Put in the steps. Brow, bow, see. Bang, 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 you know. Thud, thud. Crash, crash. All right, now we'll check out the next EPM. Boom, bang, thud. You see, we're going right, just at a terrific rate of speed, and then all of a sudden, hey. You know, I think this is why I hated my grandmother. Of course, you're right there, ready to commence again, but no, that isn't the end of that cognition. Now, if the auditor is unskilled in recognizing PC origins and unskilled in handling ITSA, he can lay a terrible egg right at that point. See, he can try to force the PC on down the bank or force the PC into actions or shut him off or herd him up one way or the other, do something with him, when that's actually what he ought to do is just sit back and smile. It's total auditing action. Ah, but that requires judgment, too, because supposing the PC was cognizing on other N-words in the bank, and supposing he was traveling all over the bank with his ISA. Oh, no, we don't want him traveling all over the bank with it. He isn't cognizing, you see. He's just sitting there speculating. Well, I wonder if this is an N-word. I wonder if that's an N-word. Next thing you know, you're going to have the most frozen tone arm that you could find south of Nome. There it'll be. Well, so at this point, you've got to know guiding style. You've got to be able to herd that PC. You've got to be able to shut him up without ARC breaking it. And of course, the auditor has learned that. He's learned it. Well, good. I'm glad you've got a lot of N-words there. Well, that's fine. I'm glad you're cognizing on that. Fine, fine. Well, thank you very much. Now, I got all that. Now, what do you suppose this next item is? And the PC says, well, the next item. Well, the next item is so-and-so and so-and-so. We go on down the bank. But let's take an auditor who has been carefully trained to do repetitive command auditing and can assess if he holds his tongue between teeth like that while he looks at the meter. And now let's turn him loose in this lion's cage, you see, called R6, where he himself is under heavy restimulation usually too. And his last session hasn't gone. And a bunch of other things are terrific liabilities about his auditing. And now, without any basic training, let's expect him to get some kind of a result. He's still trying to find out various things. Does R6 work? Are GPMs there? Can anybody possibly ever get cleared? Or is he trying to get cleared on R6? He hasn't cognited yet that you don't get cleared on R6, that you get cleared back at 4, you see? And he hasn't meshed all of this. He's still got all these searching answers. And then he has no pattern of training on styles of auditing. And, of course, he's just going to have an awful time. Because, you see, he'll have a hard enough time if he has the training on all the styles of auditing, and he can do each one of these styles. He will have a hard enough time just grappling with the new strangeness and complexities of the whole reactive mind. Because you're just asking him nonchalantly, all right, go ahead and run the PC through his reactive mind. Because that's all there is to PC's reactive mind. See, well, all right, just running through his reactive mind. The guy said, reactive mind? Who? You know, well, and so forth. And let's see. Now, what did it say? What was the pattern? You know, he's trying to remember the pattern. And he isn't skilled at this point in that. And then we also hit him in the head with what style does he use? He won't make them. Because even given all of his information and so forth, he actually should be at least 20 hours on solo audit after he goes into this. So he gets the reality on the bank. And all of a sudden he'll coordinate the bank against the reads, he'll coordinate his auditing against how to handle this. All of a sudden it all falls together beautifully, it's very smooth, and he goes on from there. If he doesn't go on from there, somebody can get him with a scruff of the neck and take some of the charge and overburden off the thing, don't you see, straighten him out and do a bit of case analysis, something like that, but not run a bank, and put him back on running the bank. And he eventually will find that he can grapple with his own bank, which is a tremendous piece of confidence. Then he's got a good subjective reality on it. But for him to do that without any background of auditing styles and so forth would again be almost incredible. It's one thing to be a PC, it's one thing to be an auditor, but to be an auditor and a PC with all auditing styles demanded while running on through the reactive bank is quite a trick. And therefore, I have some feeling that somebody should be prepared to do this. So the auditing, which you're doing at lower levels, is, of course, very much gauged at these lower levels. Now, somebody the other day was going to go back home and audit a couple of PCs on GPMs. They're not even releases, you think. You want to audit them on this. You find everybody is tugging away at the idea of going to the top. Our society is gauged that in order to be successful, you have to be at the top. There are very few ladders around. And if you'll notice, why, there are very few at the top. And the reason there are very few at the top is that there are no ladders provided. There are a great deal of booby traps provided. There are a lot of ropes that are half cut through provided. But there are very few ladders provided. Now, a PC has to climb the same ladder. And these are gauged against what auditing a PC will respond to at what level. Which isn't covered in the bulletin, but it's quite pertinent. Now look, a PC would have to be up to withstanding all style. Well, do you realize that it's the constancy of lower level auditing, short sessions and constancy. It's the fact that the auditor's predictable. The PC now knows and becomes certain because the PC can predict what the auditor is going to do. Well, a PC isn't going to predict anything in all style. So he already has to have a high level of confidence in auditors. Right? Well, how's he going to gain that? Well, he's going to gain that by going up to the levels. Also, you could describe the reactive bank. He becomes familiar, in other words, to reacting to these various styles of auditing. He finds none of them bite. He's now familiar in reacting to all these styles. Well, so when they're all thrown at him, one after the other, out of sequence and so forth, as is necessary in R6, well, it all seems very usual to him. Whereas he'd do his nut, to use the Britishism, if he possibly were subjected to this kind and type of auditing as his first debut into Scientology. What the hell is going on? You see, he had no certainty on it at all, and he quickly fouled up. There's a case fact that prevents you from grabbing somebody off of the street out here. Everybody wants to get to the top, and they want their R6 auditing, and they're very important people. You find out the lower they are, the more important they are, you see, and the more exaggerated their ideas and their ability is. And you get somebody up here, and you just drag him off the street at random, and you start to run him on R6. Funny part of it is you might get away with it. You might get away with it for several GPMs, or you might get away with it with this or that. But remember, you're just playing your luck. It's something like running a race with the saddle cinch of the horse cut three quarters of the way through, don't you see? And with only one nail holding the shoe on each hoof. Now, the conditions there are so strained that I doubt you would be able to progress 50 hours of auditing into R6 without becoming a terrible cropper. A really terrible cropper. And you haven't got any background or backlog in the PC with which to salvage the PC. The PC has no confidence that Scientology would rescue a PTP. The PC has no confidence that this somatic, which is now turning on, would ever turn off again. The PC is all leery. The PC may think he's being psychoanalyzed. He's never found out about it yet. You never know what the devil this PC was all about. He may be gauging all of our six as to whether or not his ears sting. His hidden standards are in his road, you see. R6 isn't working because his ears don't sting. He knows when things work. His ears get warm and tingle. You know, well, you got all of those liabilities fighting against you. You're just asking for it. So if you take a PC off the street and put him on R6, don't write me and say, Ron, this person has spun in and having a terrible time. What do I do now? So I'm telling you what to do right here, see. And there isn't much of anything you can do if you haven't done the other first. So the nonsense of taking somebody and immediately putting them on R6 just because they wave a lot of money in your face or some other insufficient inducement is simply becoming the effect of somebody's bank. And it's nothing more than that. You're just making yourself the effect of their bank. And boy, don't think you aren't going to be the effect of their bank from there on, even more so. That's going to get pretty grim. So what you want to do in a case like that is saying, fine. I would be very happy to run you on R6. Very, very happy to run you on R6. Yes, sir, we will sign you up for R6. All right. Now, tell me about your life. Priest, he says, you know, I'm not getting any of these goals and so forth. Well, I think we're clarifying your goals pretty good. You see these session goals up here? They're pretty good. Are you making them? Well, I'm not making that one. I want to be OT by Tuesday because then I get another promotion from the something or other. Well, all right, I'm sorry you're not making that particular goal. And go right on auditing him with what you're auditing. All of a sudden, about Tuesday, 3 months later, while this guy... after a few sessions, a week or something like that, this guy all of a sudden says, you know, I think my anxiety about being OT, I thought I was going to get worse. And, you know, I just realized that I'm not going to get worse. That's quite remarkable. And you hit the first thing that was really real to him. You made a release. He isn't being audited in a frame of mind of total desperation, but if he doesn't get audited, you see, he's now going to go through the floor and disappear, or something is going to cave in on him, don't you think? The most remarkable frame of mind, because most people start in their auditing, no matter how quiet they look to you on the surface, in a total desperation. All they say, well, we'll go along with this, and I'd be very happy to get better, and yes, I want to be able to play ping pong better, and so forth, and they go along with this, and so forth. But actually, sitting back to that, it's total desperation. They see themselves going on the same old treadmill, don't you see, down the same old chute, into the same old bunch of mud. And they know it's a very steep chute, and they know that if they don't keep running like mad on that treadmill, they're going to go into that chute. And you build them up to a point where they have a little more confidence in their own future. Just that little point. All of a sudden they come off this desperation kick. Fine. So move them on up the line. And you would actually overestimate now the amount of time necessary to make somebody walk that ladder. You're probably assigning too much time to it in your own mind, because you're assigning it out of your experience, and there's been a great deal of technical advance here, a rather dizzy amount of technical advance in the last 18 months, and it'd be pretty hard to catch experience up to it. You'd have to audit a lot of different kinds of PCs and that sort of thing and apply the techniques exactly as they were supposed to be applied to gain experience. So actually, your prediction of how long somebody would be on one of these levels from your own instincts and so forth would probably be at fault. You see, you probably would overestimate the amount of time, and you'd probably tend to overrun the PC at any given level just to be sure, which is fine. Go right ahead and do so. But recognize that you have to adjust your reality and experience against what's actually happening with PCs. And you'll find that there is an acceleration of gain. The gain accelerates. That is, for any given moment of time, the gain increases per hour of auditing time better. You get more gain per unit of auditing time, you see. And then you get more and more gain. And then you get more and more and more gain per unit of auditing time, don't you see? And your slow rate on a PC is 0 and 1. That's really slow rate. Because you've got a guy who is crawling out of that well, and he crawls up 3 inches in the auditing session, and he falls back 2 7/8 inches in the intervening period. And his actual rate of advance is 1/8 of an inch per session on a well which is several thousand feet deep. Life to him looks terribly, terribly forbidding. Now, you actually are only dealing with that strata of the society who are voluntarily seeking auditing. And this is a new thing. Nobody's done that before. They've only really addressed treatment. That is, a majority of treatment given in a society was to those people who were lying across the track of society. They were in the road of society, and psychotherapy and treatment of the Asclepians and other things was to get out of the road of the society or out of the road of a family somebody who was in a bad way. And they considered these chaps were a liability. They kept running around the forum, you know, with no toga on, you know, interrupting the speeches being made, you know. This sort of thing, you see, so that somebody'd say, well, there you are, Bill, and get him out of the road. Well, that's because the state could see this, and therefore the state or the family head, something like that, would then be quite willing to put out money in order to get this fellow straightened out. So the psychotherapist or the Asclepian or the medical doctor or the witch doctor or any other of the more archaic forms would just follow the line of least resistance, you see. Oh, the state's willing to get rid of the very sick and the very nutty. And so they pay us to get rid of the very sick and the very nutty. Of course, we can't do it. We can certainly keep them out of the road. Now, what we need is more institutions and more hospitals, and more hospitals and more institutions and more appropriations. And we need more appropriations, more institutions, and more hospitals. And what they needed, of course, was a better understanding of man, but they weren't paid to have that. So they were only paid numerically. There were 8 squillion nuts in the society, and they were allocated as their pay so many drachma or something per bed, don't you think? Quantitative basis, long method of appropriation. You think? So there was no incentive. And you get very easily confused with that other laughable nonsense, because what you're doing is handling a level of society that yet has some inkling that they can do something about themselves. Remember that. That's your basic entrance point. Now, you can promote that entrance point, and you can increase that tiny spark. But if it isn't there at all, and you can't communicate with it at all, the guy has wind, because he can't go up from there, because the only person that can make a Satan well is a Satan. What's the point of no return? Well, the point of no return is no faintest idea at any time ever that self can do anything about anything. When you hear somebody saying, well, there's no reason to vote and so on, I couldn't do anything about it anyhow. I don't care to talk about politics. I don't have anything to do about it anyway. You know, well, that person is gone on the third dynamic. And these big super socialist states that are supposed to take care of everybody inside the barbed wire, these states, in actual fact, only come into existence when the majority of population is in that frame of mind. It actually isn't the fault of the state. The state comes into existence because a bunch of blokes out through the society no longer feel that anything can be done about anything, and therefore they just go through the treadmill, and they're simply staying alive, you know. And you wonder, why does one of these socialist or communist states fail to produce? Why do they always have production problems? Why is everybody in Russia starving to death such a rate that they had to get rid of their premier, or whatever he was? And their boss over there was moved off. It didn't have anything to do with greedy political issues. People were hungry, and people didn't have any shoes to wear. And nobody could do anything about it anyway. And that was the prevailing thought. And he must have queued and egged with all these people who couldn't do anything about it anyhow. And he did have a few leaders around who thought you could still do something about it. And so they gave him the deep six, and the population never said a word because, of course, they couldn't do anything about it anyway. It wasn't that they approved or disapproved of the removal of the head of state of Russia last month. You see? They just couldn't have done anything about it. That's pretty wild. It's a pretty wild frame of mind. Well, now, let's add that up on the first dynamic. That's the only reason I'm getting it to you on the phone. Anything to do about it. The brain is all composed of cells. Actually, there's synapses and neurons. They do it all. And if you could do anything about it, there isn't any place to do anything about it, because who wants to make a synapses well? Not like you're getting better. I'm getting better. There isn't anything there to get anything any better. There isn't anything there that could get any better anyhow. Even if you could get better. And you get a philosophy like Wundtianism. Right? Man's an animal. There ain't nothing there. He is a bunch of mass brain work that is very interesting under a microscope. You know? I mean, that's the philosophy which you would get at that point. So that, again, is not premeditated, but is itself only a symptom of the individual attitude. You actually then are appealing to a person who has some tiny, tiny, dim spark that maybe he could do something about himself. Or maybe he could do something about the society. Okay? That's the person you're appealing to. And so therefore you're appealing to a minority. The kickback, of course, we get from the state and that sort of thing is they tell us we're a bunch of fakes and bums, you see, and that we can't do anything and we can't do anything from. So, well, that's because they know there's nothing can be done about it. You see, the medical profession spends I don't know how much money per annum in the United States listing and enforcing into legislation diseases that can't be cured. They've got bills. There are 25 diseases which you must not treat in California, for instance, because they can't be cured. Their bulk of contribution to the Better Business Bureau and so forth is to get literature released that demonstrates completely that people can't be cured. Well, you say that's a very funny thing for a healing profession to be doing. Well, of course, the bug in that is because you call them a healing profession. That's not a very funny thing for a bunch of guys who are getting their total appropriation in proportion to the number of sick people there are around. Well, naturally, they'd be trying to convince everybody something couldn't be cured because, of course, this puts more money in their pockets. This puts more power in their hands, you see. The less that can be cured in the society, if you follow out the reasoning, the more tops they are, and they themselves are incapable of thinking the thought through that that includes them. And somehow or another, these birds are never able to equate this last one. They're sort of mad and low-toned anyway. You'll find some atomic physicist. Well, it doesn't make any difference whether you kill one person with a rifle or the whole population of Earth. I mean, the same degree of morality has nothing to do with it. You kill a city, you kill one person. I mean, war is war. It has anything to do with anything, you see. And no difference between these things and so forth, so therefore it's perfectly okay for me to build atomic bombs and give them over to a bunch of gibbering boobs that have elected themselves heads of states. That's how he justifies the whole action. There's no difference between it and so forth. And he goes on and he builds all these things, you know, and he hands them all out to the, you know, like some 5-year-old kid, 2-year-old kid. Here, Johnny, have a Koch 45. Yeah, Willie wants another Koch 45. All right, we'll build him one. And when he gets down to this point, why, he hasn't included himself in. Just for fun, one time, as I think I've told you before, I made an experiment. I took a salesman who wasn't interested in the atomic bomb, and I carefully broke him down to points of his possessions that he was worried enough about to be worried about the bomb. I was trying to explain to him what of his and what around him would disappear if he were in a bombed area. And I broke it down point by point, don't you see? Well, you know, almost repetitive process. Well, would he be upset if his wife and children got knocked off by a bomb? Why, hell, he couldn't have cared less. Made any difference to him, he'd be all right. That's right. And I just kept breaking this down. I finally got to his wallet, and he started to get worried. But it wasn't the money in his wallet, oddly enough. It was his Social Security card. And when he finally realized that his Social Security card would be charred beyond recognition, he started to worry about atomic bombing. And he left the room nattering a little bit about people making and using atomic bombs, that it wasn't quite nice. But I, of course, trailed it down to a demonstration that it did have something to do with him. Well, similarly, you, on a broad public front, first by setting an example that people are getting better, and next by showing them, you see, cutting it back to a point where they might possibly themselves quite possibly be able to do about it. In other words, reawaken this spark. Then you would make progress through the society. But that is the course which you will follow through the coming years. It will be that sort of an action. You're doing fine, and you're getting better, and things in your vicinity are running all right, don't you see? And somebody saying, maybe it was luck, maybe it was this, maybe that. I'm trying to explain this all the time. It's a bug that has appeared in their immediate social environment. You're an oddity. You aren't all falling to pieces like everybody else is. Why? Well, they're prepared then to have the question answered. And it's answered on the basis of, could they do anything to help themselves? And that would be your first edge in. There'd be some spark of something that they could either resent or resist or help or something, you see. There'd be a little scale running. And when the person hits that line, he'll eventually walk up the line who wants some processing. But you're doing something that has not occurred before on this planet. Therefore, it's very easily confused and gotten upset about, because you're taking people who yet have some tiny inkling that they can get better. But all through their auditing, that must be improved. And therefore, this emphasis on wins. That's how we must keep the PC winning. Keep the PC at cause and winning. We mustn't ever knock them around into a situation where they believe they can't better themselves. Have them get tremendous auditing failures, you see, with a tremendous crash. And it's that little point of self at cause which must be reached. And, of course, your readiest people to reach are those people who do believe they can do something about themselves. They're very easy to handle. But rekindled by various mechanisms such as example, discussion, that sort of thing. In others, you see, and you're working with that level of society, and you're not following the route of, there are 8 million nuts, and so therefore we have 8 million people in our charge, and therefore we get appropriations to take care of these 8 million people. Don't you see? That's the old approach. And that's why nobody was really interested in doing anything about anybody. They're being paid for their disabilities. Well, now, you're going at it on a reverse line. And that reverse line isn't harder. actually that reverse mind is easier. It's always easier to indulge in a successful activity than one which simply holds everybody in cages and they grunt and groan, you see. You follow that? Because it's more rewarding. The actual fact is it's easier to make somebody better than it is to make them worse. A Thetan resists getting worse. He's resisted it for ages. And he's so used to resisting getting worse, don't you see, that it's a brand new vector. It's a brand new vector to say you can get better, and he finds it very hard to resist this. He has no built-up resistance to this thought. And you keep telling him he can get better, and he keeps hearing he can get better, and so forth, and then all of a sudden he begins to realize that he himself would have to do something about it in order to get better. At that point, he moves up, and he gets to the point, finally, realizing he's not now going to get worse. And he, at that point, is a release. And if you're not at least working with a release on R6, the guy is just sitting there going through some kind of motions, and the environment around him is going to smash him in, and his cognitions, you see, aren't really very pertinent. It's rather ridiculous to listen to his cognitions. He's running the actual basic points of the bank, and you'll find him cognizing on the fact of, oh, I see now. Maybe that's why I cut my finger yesterday. Maybe that's why I sometimes cut my finger, yes. It solved my life. He's running some engram to kill everybody in sight, don't you see? He doesn't cognize at any magnitude, don't you see? There's nothing going on, really. And you're just handling charge, and there's no PC there much to handle the charge, and you can just assign it to the point that you, as the auditor, are running through now at R6 the same experience that Dianetic auditors had perpetually. They could always knock out somebody's arthritis, and they would be very, very happy as an auditor to have fixed up somebody's lumbosis or something of the sort. The only difficulty was the PC hadn't found out about it. Actually, you could force somebody through an auditing session, cure them up one way or the other, straighten them up like mad, fix them up so they never had any more domestic trouble. You do the wildest things with these people, you see. And it was like repairing a typewriter. It was still a typewriter. One of the reasons we came off of Dynex, because self-determinism and other factors of that character had entered in, we ourselves, in this study, had found out that there was something there. There was something doing it. There was something getting better. And it wasn't all just negative gain. It was also positive gain, hence Scientology. Now, auditing styles are all part and parcel of this. So you've got these things plotted at the most win, or the most likely win, at that level where you find the PC. Now, the PC originally will most likely win at level zero. It isn't that you need tremendous, new, sparking, beautiful processes in order to push this PC up the line. No, he's more likely to win with this very simple process. It's a, he's just talking. He finds out he can talk to somebody. Big win, man. Terrific. This isn't what you're erasing. This isn't what you're doing. Nothing like that. So, the auditing style then is adjusted to the most likely progress for the PC. You possibly have never much thought of this subject of how does the PC receive auditing? How does the PC react to auditing? We think more in terms of the PC has a case, and the case gets better, don't you see? Or the case improves, the PC's behavior improves, or his environment improves, or something like this. And we probably don't too often equate that to just this. That's the PC's reaction to the processing. The PC then responded to a certain level of processing. That's why the PC won. He didn't necessarily respond to a particular button that was pushed on his case. You see, we've always had with us this other factor that just auditing, almost gobbledygook auditing, was quite capable of improving somebody's case. Did you ever get puzzled about this? Did you ever see anybody in doing TRs get a case win? Well, why? There's no process. And sometimes, particularly back in 1954, there were quite a few auditors around who were absolutely mad on this subject of the process. The process was everything, and there was no auditing connected with the process. The process did it all. They didn't have to do anything. The PC didn't have to do anything. You see, they had it mixed up like it was a pill or something. I quickly broke some of this, fast as found. But the point I'm making is, actually, yes, the process is very valuable. Unless you knew what processes to run, he'd soon come to a point of no gain, don't you see? But the actual fact is that the actions of auditing all by themselves, completely devoid of processes, account for a very respectable portion of the PC's gain. It makes a terrific mystery to some auditor if he sees that Joe always gets gains on the PC, but the question he's liable to ask Joe is, what did you run on them? Well, the answer to the question is, how did Joe run PCs? It's how he was audited. It wasn't what was audited on the PC. And that is something that we have never paid very much attention to and haven't covered it to any great degree, but you will find it in auditing styles. And it's how you audit the PC to a gain. And frankly, if you were simply to ask him about his old boots and hobbies, that it's a style, don't you see? Everybody being very significant, saying, well, what questions do you put on the blackboard? Well, at that level, it just doesn't matter what questions you put on the blackboard. You shouldn't put too beefy a one on the blackboard that's too significant, because that isn't what's happening. It's the style. You're conditioning somebody to speak to somebody else. That's what you're doing. He finds out he can talk without getting his throat cut. Hey, there's somebody I can communicate with. It's his most usual cognition. Whether he expresses it or articulates it or not, that's usually his cognition. Well, actually, it doesn't do much good to run him beyond that cognition. That's the ability regained, but it's regained by the style, don't you see? All right, now let's take the very next style above this, which is muzzle auditing. Boy, that's quite a jump. That's a fantastic discipline. And unless you train your PC to some degree as to what's expected and show him what this auditing cycle is and what this muzzle auditing is all about, he can't predict it, and he doesn't know what to do, and he tries to fall back into IFSA. Well, no, let's just graduate him upstairs in a hurry, because he's quite capable now, you see, of taking this step. He's learned he could talk to somebody. All right, now let's teach him this other thing, and he could enter into a piece of this drill. And that is, when he's asked a question, to actually look it over and answer it. And then that's something. Do you realize that that is a sort of an 8C all by itself? That's a fabulous thing. And you know, there's tons of PCs I've seen. Somebody's trying to audit them on some upper level who have never gotten that skill. Never been able to do that. You ask them a question, you know, do birds fly? And they say, birds, birds. I visited the Smithsonian Institute one time. You see, look on that. It's not something fundamentally wrong with the case, so much as an inability, which can be knocked out, and the ability of it can be regained. Can you answer a question when you're asked one? And if you put muzzle auditing to the PC on that basis. All right, now we're going to go through a long series of processes and processing and so forth, and the one thing which is at stake here is whether or not you can answer the question you've been asked. That's quite a process all by itself, isn't it? Therefore, he'd take very kindly to your saying, I'm sorry, and I don't think you answered the auditing question. I guess I didn't. Well, I'm not so good at it yet, am I? Instead of ARC breaking. He had an understanding that, completely aside from other things being run on him, that basic fundamental is something he should learn how to do. And you can pull him up short then, can't you? And say, hey, let's see if we can't get a little bit better at this. You know? right, now in this next session here, we're going to see if you're very good at this. We're running times you communicated. All right, that's fine. That's all we're running. But let's see if we can't really get the ball here. Well, what in essence is the whole gain of AC, which is one of the most fabulous processes. You don't think patting the wall is going to do anything for anybody. Well, it isn't going to do very much. It's reach and withdraw from nest and that sort of thing. Well, that's fine. Yes, we know there's a gain involved with it. But what is it essentially? The guy finds out that he can execute an auditing command. Well, it's pretty interesting. After a while, he finds out. You know, when he says to walk over there, you know, I do. And when he says touch the wall, I do. And then the next thing that it picks up, all in one fell swoop, is duplication. And boy, the individual who has individuated from all of life on the basis of not being able to duplicate anything in life is a mighty lonely Joe. He's way out, man. He can't be anything. Remember the old beingness process? He can't be anything because he can't duplicate anything. Well, this is all part and parcel to orders, too, isn't it? You'll find out that this person, when you give him an order, you say, put the cans down and so forth, why, he'll put them in his pockets or something. Well, unless you've gotten a human being out of that wobble and scrabble and so forth, you haven't improved his ability to confront existence. Because, of course, he can't see those things he can't be. Can't duplicate, in other words. Well, duplication is simply repetitive action. I may have skipped over that a little fast for you. Some of you may remember the old beingness process. That was taught in about 1954. A Thetan can only be what he can see. And what he can't see, he can't be. And he can only see something because he can duplicate it. Actually, you know the remarkable stories and reports you get of an accident. Well, it's peculiarly an accident. It isn't that people's observation in general is bad. They're looking at something they jolly well don't want to be. And so you get the most distorted stories of what happened at this accident. A cop is always up against this. He always gets a half a dozen different stories. And how a court ever admits evidence of watching a crime as reason enough to hang somebody, I wouldn't know. Because the most unreliable evidence in the world. Because, of course, the fellow couldn't see it. Can't be it. He just knows very well that he wouldn't want to be hit by a car. So he actually doesn't see anybody hit by a car. Well, you have a slight occupational liability as an auditor, is that you're looking at a PC all the time that you don't particularly want to be. You're trying to improve him, aren't you? Well, fortunately for us, it isn't necessary for you to be willing to be aberrated to get well. Follow that thought through. It isn't necessary for you to be willing to be aberrated to get well. Okay. Because we have the whole anatomy of the reactive bank, there's no sense in it. You see, if a Thetan didn't have a reactive bank, and he hadn't made ECPM, he hadn't agreed on all of this and so forth, he would probably be completely unaberratable. He couldn't be aberrated at all. There would be no dwindling spiral. See, there's basic things that you say could get wrong with him. But in actual fact, he wouldn't have any of those things wrong with him. He would actually have to determine to have something real wrong with him. And when he determined it as thoroughly as make a complete reactive mind that would keep him crazy from there on out, this was almost the accidental perfect trap. The trap he ordinarily wouldn't fall into. But there he was in it. He did it. You see, he had to decide to be aberrated with exclamation points for some reason or other best known to him. And then having decided so, he was too stupid to get himself out of it. You see, but that's what's wrong with everybody means in essence that the other things that were wrong with him actually had blown. It's just that one thing left. There were a lot of things that could have been wrong with the thing, but that one. He had to decide to be aberrated. He had to decide to make and create and put in place and continue to create the reactive bank in the universe. He had to decide this all off his own bat, incredible as it may seem. Oh, he could have been grieved, and he could have been persuaded, and he could have talked to somebody, but let's not miss the point. He did do it. And having done it, why, he was then in the soup. And that's actually all we're unwinding. There isn't anything else there to unwind. But because there's so many locks on the reactive bank, and because it tends to group and bunch up and get in re-stimulation, you have degree of aberration of cases. There are certain basic things that can go wrong with a thetan which are above the level of the reactive bank and GPMs. And these certain basic things include duplication and communication. They can be aberrated. Oh, my, they're little old lonesomes, regardless of any N-word. Yes, there's some N-words that have to do with these things. But that really doesn't matter. These are then not low-level ideas. These are very high-level ideas. These would be native to any thetan anyway, whether he had a bank or didn't have a bank. And you can work on them, and you can improve them, because they have such a strong influence. You see, these things he should be able to do pretty well. He shouldn't be stumbling around on communication and duplication. Bank or no bank, N-words or no N-words, you see. And actually, they do improve rather remarkably. And he comes upscale to a point where he can confront bank and that sort of thing. So what are you asking him to do? You're asking him to, at ITSA, your listening style auditing, you're asking him to communicate and find out he's doing it, and he does. And somebody's going to receive the communication, so therefore it must be communication. It proves it to him that he is communicating because somebody's receiving it, don't you see? And then we go up to the next stage here of muzzled auditing. Now he's got to receive a communication, and he proves it by answering it. You follow? And then he proves it to himself that he has answered it. And he proves it to himself he has received the communication because the auditor is satisfied with the fact that he's answered the auditing question. And of course, any time the auditor lets a PC receive a communication or a question that he doesn't answer, then the PC is not then satisfied, because he knows he didn't answer the auditing question, and so therefore he begins to doubt his own ability to receive a communication. It's as elementary as that. And then he's doing you in as the auditor by not answering the auditing question. It isn't that the process wouldn't work unless it were received or anything like that. No, he now doubts that he's received the communication. And he doubts he's received the communication because he didn't answer it. And then the auditor didn't call him up on the fact that he didn't answer the incoming communication. So, therefore, everything gets kind of unreal to him. Now, he's proving it to himself continuously by answering the auditing question that he is capable of receiving a communication, because it proves itself. He's answered the thing he received. And not only that, but he can do it repetitively. He can do it again and again and again and again and again. And when he first gets the idea of answering three questions in a row, man, he's ready to go round the bend. You may not realize it, but you ask some people the same question just twice, and they blow up in your face. Did you ever have that happen? Ask them the same question twice. So therefore, you've got to make a point to the PC. Now, we are going to get you so that you can answer several questions in a row, all the same question. And he'll begin to see this with his skills. All right, so we got muzzled auditing. Now, the next level is mainly devoted to, is there something there? Now we're up to guiding style. Is there anything there? You see, the whole world to him is reasonless. Although he's being very reasonable about everything, actually there's no reason for anything. He's on the lower harmonic of the truth. All reasons have to be dreamed up, but he's gone to a point where there really, the average human being, there's no real reason for anything. He doubts, for instance, there's any real reason for him to be unhappy. He's unhappy, but there's no reason for him to be unhappy. There's nothing making him unhappy. You get this expressed all the time as, I feel nervous today. Somebody says, I feel nervous today. It's an accepted fact. There's nothing causing this nervousness. You get people going off into numerology. You know, like on the 17th of the month, I feel nervous. And it has something to do with the number 17, and 1 and 7 added together make 8. 8 is money, so therefore it must be money. But that person is still trying to find a reason for his nervousness. You find the bulk of the society does not ever try to find any reason for their nervousness. And you very often as an auditor are completely baffled. You say, all right, let's find out why you've got the headache. And you see if the person says, oh, no. You just said something awfully silly. There's no reason to have a headache. One simply has a headache. Of course. Now, the doctor gets far too serious about this. This person has a headache every once in a while, so the doctor wants to remove the brain. It's like the American military with their overkill. I think it's fascinating, a fascinating word, overkill. They've got 1,000 times overkill now in the arsenals in the United States. They've got enough atom bombs to kill every man, woman, and child on Earth 1,000 times each. I don't know how you compute that. You'd almost have to be a Scientologist to even approach it. And by that I mean, yes, well, you could figure out that every lifetime you could kill them, you have enough to do that. So we could stretch it out in Scientology. It makes sense. But it doesn't make any sense for them because they think you only live once anyway. And you're just a brain, see? So it's a completely senseless statement. Overkill. Why should they have one? Now, you take reasons for headaches and things like this. Completely beyond people. They got a headache. They've got a stomachache. Once in a while, you get a big cognition out of somebody, you know? I say, well, I've got terrible stomachache today. What you're missing, you see, is you yourself know that things cause things. You're not living in a causeless world and environment, you see. So it doesn't make any sense to you to have somebody over there that you're talking to living in a causeless world. The stomachache is a fact. Nothing caused it. It appears and disappears with complete mysteriousness. And you get a big cognition out of them one day when you ask them, well, did you eat something that disagreed with you? And once in a while, if you ask somebody that under those circumstances, they would say, hi, George, you know, I did, you know. I had 20 raw weenies last night. You know, I'll bet that's what, you know. But you wonder, what's the, and what you would become hung up with is, why? Why the emphasis they're putting on this, see? How come they seem to be so happy about this? Or they seem to be so relieved about this? Well, that isn't what they're cognizing on. They're cognizing on the fact that stomach aches could be caused by something. That there is cause. Big idea. Big brand new idea. And they'll be pleased as punch. They haven't really grappled with the idea itself, you see. They're just suddenly they're very relieved about something. Then this goes hand in glove with it. Natively, I'm just not a stupid man. There's something that causes my stupidity. You see? That thought goes along with it. Then they get other thoughts that, whoa, my life doesn't have to be a horrible mess all the time. Maybe something in my vicinity is causing this. And they do terrific resurgence. Maybe something is causing the condition I'm in existence. Maybe it isn't just reasonable that husbands and wives fight all the time. Maybe something is causing this. Well, of course, it's the wife, naturally. You know. Then they'll hit the handiest target. You see? In other words, you've now got the guy looking. He's got a new idea, a brand new idea, that things are caused. That's terribly elementary, isn't it? It isn't something you ordinarily would even look at or even respect as a source of aberration, and yet it's one of the primary ones. Your guiding style auditing gets him to look around in his life and find the causes of things. Now, having found them, of course, you can do something about them. as you will get another bulletin on this, it's covering here the bulletin of November 6, 1814. But there's another bulletin that's a little more recent than this, which talks about what styles you use with remedies. It's the beginning of a series of bulletins about how to adapt auditing style to the Book of Remedies, just meeting up level two, you see. And there's guiding secondary style, which is the most elementary thing in the world, although you'd use it in session, although you would also use it in assist. It's peculiarly adapted to several remedies, which is simply steer plus itza. Steer plus itza. We used to have a number for it. Steer plus itza. And you guide the guy into talking about something to get a tone arm blow down, and then you make him talk about it. You see, to get the tone arm action out of it. And then while he's talking about it, he mentions several new things. Don't you see the getting tone arm action? So you note those things down, and you come back afterwards and talk about those things. Don't you see? Well, that's the process that goes with it, but this other is just a pure style all by itself. He gets PC to look, and then you steering, and he's looking. You herd him around, head him off here, and head him in there, don't you see? And then you get him to talk about what you have found. While holding him on this subject, you don't let him wander. And he itzes on this subject. Well, itza this and itza that, and itza something rather than a marvelous assist. Remedies A and B, of course, the first two in the book of case remedies, so the auditing style with which they're handled should be quite considerably described, because they're the most flagrant ones. They have to do with definitions. Definitions in Scientology are the present subject. You mustn't miss that it's present subject, immediate subject. The immediate subject the guy's trying to study, you see. It's not just applicable to Scientology. This guy's trying to study engineering. And he hasn't understood the term in engineering, all right? Well, you can handle it. With remedy A. Remedy B is former subject. That's what makes them different. He's got the present immediate subject mixed up with some former subject. So now you've got to find the former subject and find the word in it which hasn't been defined. Well, anyway, these have nothing to do with play tables. They are processes all by themselves, and they are guiding secondary style. But the only difference between guiding secondary style and guiding primary style, or just call it guiding style, is a guiding style runs in and does a repetitive. You guide, and you do a repetitive process. You guide, and you do a repetitive process. And we want that process to be the dominant process for level two, because it teaches the two things the fellow is now doing. He's finding out that there's some cause, and then he can answer questions about it and look at it. So you've still got repetitive action on a cause. But this is the style that is improving him. It's quite important what you find, but it's only partially what you find. He's got this new style. Things cause things. Wow! See? Gee! The world isn't all a solid block with no distance between anything. There's A causing B, and there's B reacting to A, and golly, this brand new world out here. There is some reason for things, don't you see? Buildings don't just suddenly disappear in a puff of smoke, don't you know? There'd have to be an explosion. Big cognition, see? And then after the explosion, why, the bricks would be lying around on the ground. And what causes bricks to lie around on the ground? Well, it must have been an explosion to cause it. And although the person realizes these things instinctively, he never thinks them out or looks at them. Things cause things. And life, then, looks entirely different to him because he's no longer just a pawn. If things cause things, you might be able to predict. If things cause things, you might be able to do something about something. If things cause something, you might be able to do something yourself. Hey, whoa, what do you know? Gee whiz, you know? And that's the doors you're opening at that particular level. You're guiding him, and he finds causes. And having found causes, you can now do something about the thing, too. Wow. You find out he's been suffering from a present time problem, same problem, all along the line, and now you say, well, what communications didn't you ever finish through that person? Oh, so-and-so-and-so-and-so. Problem gone. You've asked the question repetitively. What communication haven't you finished the person? 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 Maybe only 10 minutes worth. The tone arm action disappeared. Wow.
I don't have any worry about Aunt Martha, you know. Gosh.
What's that synonym? He's stuck all over the universe. And by this, causes of things. And if he could locate it and then do something about the cause and straighten out that situation, that's pretty fabulous. And that's basically what he is finding out at level two. So, it's the style that's doing it. You're always beating yourself over the head about how clever you have to be. Actually, be clever enough to realize that the style. Now, by the time he's learned all that, it's perfectly safe to run him on an abridged style. Muzzled auditing, the PC cognited or did something or other and didn't answer the auditing command. Of course, because we're teaching him what we're teaching him at that level, he can receive and answer an auditing command. We must say, always, I will repeat the auditing command, so forth, so forth, so forth. Always at level two, but not at level three, because our PC is now capable of doing that. Why rub it in? A lot of people get irritated after they've been through the basic of the thing. At first, it seems to be all right to them to have this happen and so forth. But after a while, it isn't all right. The auditor sitting there saying, like a wound-up dog, they said, "Oh, I just realized that solves the whole problem of life. I will repeat the auditing command." Well, why is the PC now reacting that way? The PC might not have reacted that way earlier on the line. You see. The PC's now over this hump, and you're auditing something that doesn't have to be audited, so you have an abridged style. Of course, abridged is termed to the lower styles. It isn't an abridged upper style. It's only an abridged lower style. So it's the styles for zero, listen, one, muzzled, and two, guiding, and now we can abridge them. And by abridge, we mean we can look and see what's going on. Now the PC is getting pretty good because he thinks his life is more easy to handle and that sort of thing. You find out his PTPs are blowing quicker, that various things are happening with the PC that wouldn't happen ordinarily and so forth, and you're just slowing down the whole progress of the game by putting in the whole package, you see. How do we do a present time problem? PC says he has a present time problem. We don't guide him into it. We say, "What is it?" Bang! See? And he says, "Wow, present time problem. I got an awful problem. I got to go to Aunt Martha's tea party, and my God, I always die every time she feeds me a cup of tea. She boils it for 15 hours on the back of the stove. You know, you could float a sounding lead in it." "Well, all right," you say, "fine. Is it blown?" "If it's blown, you don't do anything else." In other words, this is audited by pure result. Having brought our PC up and gotten him out of his nappies, we can now let him walk. He says it's a present time problem. That's what it was. We saw the reaction on the meter and it blew. Oh, well. An auditor would be very foolish to pursue this thing. In fact, he'd get the PC all invalidated if he pursued it, don't you think? Well, that's the end of that present time problem. But if the PC sort of looked grooved on it and so forth, you'd say, "Well, give me some communications that you haven't given out, Martha." "Well, he says so and so and so and so and so and so." You get multiple answers and things of this character. That's what I want. "Well, I didn't do that, and I didn't do that." And you find a PC eventually gets indoctrinated into a multiple answer. You ask one question, he gives you the five answers necessary to flatten it, and that's the end of the process. Along about the fifth question, you get a blowdown on your tone arm, and that's it.